It is well known that the man, whom it delighteth the people to honor, keeps, and for many years has kept, as his concubine, one of his slaves. Her name is Sally. The name of her eldest son is Tom. His features are said to bear a striking, though sable, resemblance to those of the president himself. James Callender, 1802. Welcome to Civics and Coffee. My name is Alicia, and I am a self-professed history nerd. Each week, I'm going to chat about a topic on U.S. history and give you both the highlights and occasionally break down some of the complexities in history and share stories you may not remember learning in high school, all in the time it takes to enjoy a cup of coffee. Hey peeps, welcome back. For a number of years, there existed a question within the historical community as to whether or not the third president of the United States, Thomas Jefferson, had a sexual relationship with an enslaved woman he owned by the name of Sally Hemings. While some argued in favor of the likelihood of his paternity of her children, there remained doubt as to whether the story was actually true. However, in 1998, DNA tests provided sufficient evidence that Jefferson likely fathered at least one of Sally Hemings's children. While many in the historical community consider this a settled matter, including the purveyors of Monticello and the Thomas Jefferson Foundation, the idea that Jefferson would have fathered children with an enslaved individual remains too much of a stretch for some to believe. But just who was Sally Hemings? What do we know about her? And what evidence exists to prove or disprove her relationship with Jefferson? Grab your cup of coffee, peeps. Let's do this. Now, before I dive in, I wanted to provide a bit of a warning. This episode is focused on Sally Hemings and her interactions with Thomas Jefferson. While there are still scholars who are skeptical the relationship existed, or existed to the extent of fathering children, most believe there is sufficient evidence to support claims made by Hemings' son that Jefferson and Hemings were involved for a number of years. That being said, sharing her story means diving into some very uncomfortable facets of American history. You can't share the story of Sally Hemings without talking about slavery and its implications. While we will never know the details of their relationship, it is not out of the ordinary to question how much the power dynamic of enslaver versus enslaved played throughout their lives. I am sharing the story as told to her son, Madison. As such, this is the story of Sally Hemings from the belief that she and Jefferson did have a relationship and that he was the father of at least one of her children. While not graphic in nature, the subject matter may not be suitable for all audiences, so please use your discretion accordingly. Now that I've covered those bases, let's talk about Miss Hemings. As an enslaved woman, Sally Hemings left no primary evidence of her existence outside of her children. She kept no diaries. She entered into no contracts. The information we do know about her comes from an interview provided by her son Madison in 1873. Historians feel fairly confident Sally Hemings was born in 1773. She was the daughter of John Wales, a white slave owner, and Elizabeth Hemings, an enslaved woman who was his property. Elizabeth had several children with Wales, however, the details of their relationship remain unclear. Wales also happened to be the father of future First Lady of Virginia and wife to Thomas Jefferson, Martha, thus making Sally and Martha half-sisters. Jefferson began courting Martha, who was also his third cousin, in 1770, and they married on January 1, 1772. Upon her father's death in 1773, the Jeffersons inherited property, including enslaved individuals. This inheritance of people included the Hemings family, who moved together to Monticello. Sally Hemings grew up on the grounds of the 5,000-acre estate, caring for Jefferson's daughter Maria, otherwise known as Polly or Mary. Martha and Thomas had six children before she passed away in 1782. However, only one of them, Patsy, lived past the age of 25. Hemmings was a constant presence in and around the house and was reportedly on hand when Martha Jefferson passed away. As she lay dying, Martha made Jefferson promise to never remarry. He agreed. At 39, Jefferson became a young widower who was inconsolable at losing his wife. The affair between Hemmings and Jefferson likely began during her residence in Paris. Jefferson, originally appointed as the American envoy in 1784 and later as the United States minister to France, took his eldest daughter Patsy with him. His two youngest children, Lucy and Maria, were left behind in America with their aunt and uncle. When his youngest daughter Lucy died in 1787, he requested Maria be sent to Paris, and Hemmings was sent along as a chaperone. In Paris, Sally was reunited with her older brother James, who made the journey in 1784 to learn French cooking. While his daughters attended boarding school, Jefferson made residence at the Hotel de Languillac, located on the Avenue des Champs-Élysées. I apologize, my French is terrible. There is no surviving record to confirm where Sally stayed during her time in Paris, but wherever she stayed, the entire Jefferson family came together on the weekends, providing plenty of opportunities for the two to interact. If the affair did begin in Paris, Sally would have been just a teenager, about 14 or 15, to Jefferson's 44. And while illegal and highly unacceptable by today's standards, it was not at all uncommon for teenage girls to enter into romantic relationships with much older men during this time period. If you've listened to prior episodes, then you know that it was common for individuals to have multiple marriages throughout their lives, and women of a certain age were prized for their child-rearing capabilities. And of course, any student of history also knows it was not uncommon for enslavers to have sexual relationships with the women they held as property. But what exactly is it that drew Jefferson to Hemmings? During his time in Paris, he was carrying on a romantic letter exchange with Maria Cosway, but this relationship seemed to cool shortly after Hemmings arrived. While there is no portrait of Hemmings, she was described by contemporaries as very beautiful, with long, straight black hair down her back, and was, quote, mighty near white, end quote. And remember, she was the half-sister to Jefferson's wife, Martha. Sharing the same father, Sally may have reminded Jefferson of his dearly departed spouse. Hemmings spent just over 2 years in the bustling city of over 500,000 people, where she and her brother James were exposed to a small population of free blacks and learned a bit of the local language. During her time in Paris, she and her brother learned they were free on French soil. As Jefferson prepared to return to the United States in 1789, Sally initially declined to join him, announcing her decision to remain free. According to her son Madison, Hemmings entered into negotiations with Jefferson to set the conditions upon which she would return to the United States and enslavement. Quote, to induce her to do so, he promised her extraordinary privileges and made a solemn pledge that her children should be freed at the age of 21 years. End quote. Why, you ask, would she agree to do this? Historian Annette Gordon Reed argues Hemmings may have welcomed the attention from Jefferson. Hemmings, whose father and grandfather were both white, may not have seen anything odd in entering into a relationship with a white man. And Jefferson is known to have purchased some nice clothing for his household, including Hemmings. Perhaps she made the calculation that carrying on an affair with Jefferson provided better security and safety than she had if she lived a life of freedom in Paris. But as there are no written records or diaries from Sally, historians are left only to speculate and guess as to what her motivations were. Whatever the dynamics, whether forced or consensual, Sally Hemmings and Thomas Jefferson carried on a sexual relationship for 3 decades and produced at least 6 children. There is speculation that Sally might have been pregnant upon her return to the United States in 1789. If true, this could be another reason she decided to stay with Jefferson. Returning to Monticello meant a guaranteed home for her child. And though they would inherit her enslaved status, her agreement with Jefferson guaranteed their freedom as adults. By choice or by force, Hemmings returned to the United States and remained at Monticello until Jefferson's death in 1826. As for the supposed pregnancy in 1789, while her son, Madison, maintained the child died shortly after its birth, there has thus far been no evidence discovered to support the claim. But there is sufficient corroboration regarding the birth of six other children, likely fathered by Jefferson. Aside from the DNA results establishing paternity to at least one of her children, there is also confirmation found within Jefferson's travel schedule. Each of the children born to Sally Hemings came within 9 months of a Jefferson visit to Monticello. The first reliably provable child was born in 1795 and was named Harriet. She passed away as a toddler, dying in 1797. She was followed by a son, Beverly, who was born in 1798. Another daughter was born in 1799, but also died young. There is no known name at this time. In 1801, another daughter, again named Harriet, was born. 4 years later, in 1805, Madison was born, and the final child, Easton, was born in 1808. Each of the Hemings children were taught a skill, providing further support to the claim of an agreement between Hemings and Jefferson. Jefferson had a very condescending view of bondsmen, believing them to be childlike, who were in need of protection provided by a slave owner. By learning a skill that could earn them a wage, Jefferson was doing his part to ensure they would be successful come their emancipation as adults. The affair between Hemings and Jefferson lasted 32 years, more than three times the length of his marriage to Martha. Reports of his relationship with Hemings made news in 1802 when former friend turned foe James Callender published a scathing piece in the Richmond Recorder on September 1st. The article, parts of which I read at the top of the episode, was ruthless in its criticism of Jefferson and was very unkind to Hemings, calling her a wench. Callender wrote several more pieces regarding the affair, painting Hemings as a, quote, slut as common as the pavement, end quote, and referred to her children as a litter. Despite the stories, Jefferson appeared unfazed and won re-election in 1804. Prior historians who doubted the story of a relationship between Jefferson and Hemings cast a suspicious eye on Callender's reporting, questioning his intentions. Their theory was Callender, angered at being denied an appointment within the government, was lashing out at his former friend as punishment. Another blow to the validity of Callender's story is the fact that the existence of a child by the name of Tom has never been verified. Many who argue against the supposed relationship use this fact as evidence to discredit any claims of a potential relationship between Hemings and Jefferson. However, the affair between Jefferson and Hemings appears to have been an open secret as a close friend of Jefferson's, John Hartwell Cock, made mention of it in 1859 when criticizing slave owners who used enslaved women as substitute for wives, writing, quote, "This damnable practice prevails as much as anywhere. Probably more, as Mr. Jefferson's example can be pleaded for its defense," end quote. One of the other pieces of evidence supporting the claim of the relationship is Jefferson's treatment of the Hemings family. In 1822, at the age of 21, Harriet Hemings left Monticello. Upon her departure, Jefferson authorized a payment to Harriet to cover her travel expenses. Jefferson had never previously granted freedom to any enslaved individual. Adding to the peculiarity is the fact that losing Harriet meant potentially losing future free labor, since the status of enslavement followed the mother. Harriet's departure coincided with eldest son Beverly, who also left Monticello in either 1821 or 1822 and was not pursued. Again, this was abnormal behavior for Jefferson, who previously pursued anyone who fled Monticello. Of the over 600 people Jefferson owned throughout his life, he freed only five upon his death in 1826, all of which with some familial tie to Sally Hemings, and two of which were his children. In his will, Jefferson placed Madison and Easton with their uncle, writing that he gave, quote, "to John Hemings the services of his two apprentices, Madison and Easton Hemings, until their respective ages of 21 years, at which period I give them their freedom," end quote. Sally Hemings' emancipation was not included in Jefferson's will, but she gained unofficial freedom, otherwise known as given her time, by his daughter. Sally spent her remaining years living with her sons until she passed away in 1835. As for her children, not much is known about Harriet and Beverly once they left Monticello. It is believed they moved to Washington, D.C. and, quote, passed into white society. Easton became a well-known professional musician and changed his surname in 1852 to Jefferson. He made the decision to present as a white man and passed away in 1856. As for Madison, he continued the trade he learned at Monticello, carpentry, and relocated to Ohio, owning a small farm. He shared the story of his mother and father in 1873 and passed away in 1878. The story of Sally Hemings is one that will likely always remain shrouded in mystery. Did she love Thomas Jefferson? Was the relationship consensual? Did he love her? Why did she choose to go back to a life of enslavement if she knew she could be free in France? Whatever the answers to those questions, the story of Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson remain an important example of the conflicts present throughout American history. Jefferson was an incredible thinker and visionary and contributed to the foundation of our nation. But he was also a flawed man who engaged in a relationship with someone he considered property. And Hemings is representative of the all-too-frequent faceless story of slavery and, by extension, Black history. Even today, her narrative is missing and remains largely unclear outside of her relations with Jefferson and what her son shared some 40 years after her death. Sally Hemings was a mother, a seamstress, a woman in bondage, the daughter of a white man and an enslaved woman, but she was also a negotiator, a protector, and brave. If you've been enjoying the show, please consider donating a cup of coffee through Buy Me a Coffee. Your donations help supply the books needed to keep this show going and keeps the show commercial free. If you're looking for a free way to support the pod, you can leave a review on your favorite pod ranking app. I love to see your feedback. As always, you can find show notes, source material, and request an episode topic for yourself on the website at www.civicsandcoffee.com. Thanks, peeps. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Civics and Coffee. If you want to hear more small snippets from American history, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining me, and I look forward to our next cup of coffee together.